This episode of Next At Bat is brought to you by Stupid Shit.
Stupid shit, it's shit that's stupid.
Stupid shit, you can decorate your locker with it and make all the other people jealous.
Stupid shit, put it in your ears so you can hear stupid things.
Stupid shit, what all the cool kids are eating.
Here's stupid shit. Shove it up your nose.
Hey, you got any stupid shit?
Yeah,
up
bro.
In your head?
Oh, yeah, shit. Bro. Yeah, bros, I eat it all the time. I eat stupid shit, and I have some right here for you.
Whoa, this is gonna make me the coolest kid in school. Hey, Annabelle. Any notice anything different about me?
My gosh, Louie, you're decked out in stupid shit.
Stupid shit. Blog about it.
Stupid shit. When you look at your reflection in the mirror, you'll say, hey, I'm okay.
And then when everyone else calls you a stupid shit, you'll just think they're giving you a compliment.
Did your stupid shit get left out in the rain? Well, that's okay. There's plenty of stupid shit to go around for everyone. Get yours now at the downtown Fargo Mallopolis.
Stoop, 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 stupid shit, stupid shit, stupid shit, stupid shit.
Stoop, 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 stupid shit.
It's a stupid, it's a stupid, it's a stupid, it's
stupid,
it's a stupid,
it's shit.
It's a stupid, it's a stupid.
Stupid shit.
I'm so amused by that.
Hi, I'm Philip.
Hi, I'm Matt.
First we'll have a little chat.
Then put on our improvers.
Now it's time for Next At Bat.
We're here in the apartment today with John Haynes. And as always, I'm joined by
Philip Simondet.
And I am Matt McLeod. Hi, John Haynes.
Hello, guys. How's it going?
It's going
very
great.
Good.
Yeah, thanks. Good. Thanks for coming by.
Absolutely.
So, John, you just finished or are finishing up doing a duo class instructing with your longtime duo partner, Adam.
Adam Felitz.
Adam Felitz.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Can you tell me how that went?
Sure. It went really well. It was an idea that Adam and I had a while back. And then I was at a New Year's Eve party, actually, with a bunch of improvisers and was mentioning it, and a bunch of people were like, oh, we would take that class if there was a class on creating a duo improv structure. So we offered the class. I contacted Joe Bernard over at Huge Theater and said Adam and I want to teach this class, and we put it up, and it sold out in less than 24 hours, so there was a huge demand for it. We're going to do it again, I think, but it went really well. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. What kind of stuff, what's the duo format that you and Adam do together, and then how did you translate your years of working together mm-hmm. into teaching a class that was useful to improvisers
sure.
who are working on their own duos?
Well, the duo that we have done for years is called Police Cop Detective PI. And it's,
awesome.
Yes, it's basically how that happened was, in fact, Adam told the story at the class, was that we had come up with the concept of two police detectives, Chicago police detectives,
where you're from.
Right. And Adam as well. And on a stakeout, because we said, where would there be, as we were forming the duo and we were inspired by Bassprov, Joe Bill and Mark Sutton, who
sure.
we had both studied with. And and then we saw Bassprov and we said, let's do something. And so we said, well, where would two people be where they were kind of stuck with each other and they had to have a conversation and actually knew one another. So we brainstormed a bunch and we came up with two police detectives in a stakeout. And then we said, well, what are we going to call it? I don't know. And so we just started brainstorming different words. And the words that we had ended up being police cop, detective, PI were like some of the words that we had in the thing. We said, well, why don't we just call it all of those things? And then that's how it happened. So Adam and I have been doing that for a number of years. And the format, yeah, is just the two of us on a stakeout. We get topics from the audience that they want to hear police officers discuss. And so then we have a discussion between the two of us. And then we also break out into scenes that are inspired by whatever the conversation is.
Okay.
And then we come back into the conversation. So what we did was we really sat down and asked ourselves what makes an improv duo successful, and it wasn't just our duo, but we looked at others like Bassprov and Ferrari McSpeedy and Mustache Rangers and Gay Straight Alliance and a lot of the other improv duos, especially in this Minneapolis improv community, and we said, what do we like about those groups? What makes them successful? what are the kind of, you know, philosophies around duos? And we came up with a list of 10 things that we, you know, pretty much taught to the group and just helped them find their particular strengths. And I think that was the one main thing. When you've got two people, you're the only two people to rely on in that duo. So that both is a great thing, but it's also a limiting thing. You have to understand what it is your strengths are, what your growing edges are within improv, and then kind of work those out within your structure.
Sure. Do you want to share any of those?
I know sure. That that's part, you know, of the class. No, not at all. You know, one of the things was trust. I mean, that was sure. one of the main things. And Adam and I, you know, there aren't a lot of other people that I've improvised with over the years that I trust more than I trust Adam Felitz on stage. And we always know that we're going to take care of each other mm-hmm. and take care of ourselves. And that is a huge part of it, is trust. Treating the environment as your third person is another aspect that we taught. Environment is really big in that, and creating scenic improv was a big part of it, regardless of whether you were in one location the entire time or whether you switched locations. Another part is, you know, that we taught was just the edit and how do you find creative ways to edit with, you know, and different groups do it different ways. And for us, it was breakout scenes. And for others, it's, you know, words. And others, it's just, you know, the flow of physicality within and out of scenes. So we worked with each of the groups on those kinds of things. So those are some of the things that we taught. And then just bringing in the idea of how you honor the audience. And this was a general improv sort of thing, because I think Adam and I were both of the mindset that we see a lot of improv and the audience wants to be a part of what you're doing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is why they come to see improv. Mm-hmm. And getting a suggestion from them and then actually using that suggestion is honoring the audience.
Our last group, Cubicle, actually talked about that quite a bit too.
Yeah. 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 And so, you know, well, that was one of the things we taught, general improvisational kind of philosophy, in addition to just creating a duo, was how do you get to that point where you connect with your audience, because they've come to see you, and part of that is honoring their commitment to come into that theater space and see what you do.
You talked about trusting your scene partner as well as to take care of your scene partner mm-hmm. as well as taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
How do you find that balance where you're paying just as much attention to both parties mm-hmm. so that the scene is moving forward?
Right. Well, I think, you know, part of that is, and when you take care of yourself, that mm-hmm. means that you hit the stage bringing everything you have, your energy, your commitment to the structure, your commitment to the audience, your commitment to your scene partner. And that for however long, whether it's a 15-minute set, 30-minute set, an hour-long set, you are in that. And I think with a duo, that's even more crucial, because mm-hmm. you know, you've seen or been in groups where, you know, there's 4, 5, 6 people, maybe more. And I can always look on the back line and tell the people that think they're taking a break. Yeah. You know, and I don't know that they're connected with everybody else, and they get out of the scene and like, oh good, I'm off for a few scenes now. No, actually you're not. You're always in it. The duo forces your hand on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't check out. Otherwise, I leave Adam floundering out there. And we've seen that happen, and nobody wants to see that mm-hmm. just between us. I mean, I know Adam won't listen to this, so, you know. But the same thing between him back to me. I think you also just have to believe in who you're improvising with. Mm-hmm. That's a huge thing. I, you know, have talked to a lot of improvisers, and you hear stories all the time. It's like, well, when I improvise with this person, this happens. When I improvise with this person, that happens. And there just has to be an underlying respect that you have for one another. One of the rules we gave them was, don't pick on your scene partner, because they're the only other person on stage mm-hmm. in the duo. Now, you can pick on them within the context of a scene, but be careful not to just make it adversarial, because it goes there very, very quickly, especially if, like with our structure where it's two police officers having a conversation about particular topics, we don't always have to take opposite sides of one another. We can be in complete agreement with each other, which builds on that and moves it forward. The trust factor, I think, also has to do with the two of you outside off the stage. Mm-hmm. Adam and I are, you know, Adam's one of my best friends, and we spend time together outside of improvisation. You know, I've been at his house. He's been at my house. We, you know, we go out, we do stuff. So there's a collective friendship there that's brought onto the stage. I know him. He knows me. And that makes a huge difference as well.
It seems like in the improv world, more so than the rest of the theater world, which I have a lot of background in straight theater, as do you. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
And friendship out off the stage has a lot more to do with the synergy on the stage. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I agree with that. I agree with that 100%.
Why do you think that is? I have my own thoughts.
Yeah. You know, for me and my observations, I think the reason that is because whether it's scripted theater or improvisational theater, you're being asked to take a risk on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that people take risks organically, naturally, is when they feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to feel safe is to trust the people that you're performing with.
Mm-hmm.
And it only takes one, you know, one disgruntled or bad seed, if you will, within a troupe or a cast to create a schism within that experience that will permeate everything they do on stage.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know? And as soon as, you know, and I've directed shows where I've had casts where one person can make the difference between it going really well and going horribly wrong.
Yeah.
And same thing with an improvisation. You know, I've been in troupes where one or two people all of a sudden will create a negative energy, and that, whether you want it to or not, it follows you like a stench onto the stage, and everybody can tell.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's finding that synergy. One of the things I had started instituting in the shows that I direct at Actors Theater is no cell phones at call time.
Mm-hmm.
I would walk into the green room and I would see six actors that are about ready to go on stage to perform together in separate parts of the green room, all on their phones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously there's something hugely important. And again, people that are listening to this that know me are laughing, especially if Maddie Gibb is listening, because she did an impersonation of me at lunch, which is basically just me on my phone. I'm on my phone a lot. I get that. But I instituted that because I said, we should be talking to each other.
Yeah.
Should be sharing what our week was like. We should be connecting, because that's going to help us as we get onto the stage. And so it's things like that. You know, the more opportunity you have to connect, I think the better. But I will say that with a but, for this reason. If you only ever talk about performing, and you only ever talk about improv, and you only ever talk about theater, that can sometimes not be the most positive thing either.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that we all have other interests. We have other things that we're about beyond just the theater. Theater's great. I make my living doing that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that we need to have interests that are outside of that too. And that's what we can share in as well, you know, not just what we're doing on stage. So,
Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're doing at your theater right now?
Sure. So at Actors Theater of Minnesota, and I've been there since the fall of 2009, I was at the Brave New Workshop before then and ran their school there. And so I got hired on at Actors Theater of Minnesota, and I do I run the Creative Institute there, which is educational arm of the theater. We teach classes in St. Paul at our theater space. And then we have shows, and I direct a number of the shows for them, and then we have other artistic directors that come in and work with us as well. Bill Collins is our managing director there, and so, you know, I work closely with him in terms of what we do, and he's been great. I get to, you know, kind of pick shows that I want to do. He's picked other shows, and a lot of what we do is interactive or, you know, comedy-based theater. We call it entry-level theater. You know, we're not doing a lot of traditional stuff. We're doing a lot of other things. I've directed Bye Bye Liver, the Twin Cities Drinking Play, which has been going on for a long time. Flanagan's Wake, which is an interactive Irish comedy. Guys on Ice, which was a musical comedy about ice fishing. So I directed that and a few other shows, and all of them have been comedy based. And our idea is that we want people to come to be entertained by theater, and it doesn't have to be always just traditional type theater, and that's kind of what we've done. In St. Paul, you know, our theater space is located at the Camp Bar in St. Paul and Robert Street, and they, you know, the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce and St. Paul as a whole has been really supportive of that because it brings a lot of great nightlife downtown, so...
Yeah, downtown has really been seeing a resurgence in general.
It has. We got a lot of great restaurants right next to us. You got Keys, you got Sawadi, you got Black Sheep Pizza. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a kitchen at the bar, so they deliver food to, we have their menus, cool. And they deliver their food to the bar, which is cool. So people can come in, grab dinner, go see the show, all in one deal. So it's nice.
And you're also the education director.
I am. So I teach. We're mainly improv classes right now. We're actually brainstorming some other ideas. I'd like to see us expand that. I think there's a big need for more acting classes that are outside of the university, outside of the college style classes, for people doing on camera work, for people doing other theater and that sort of thing. So I've been talking with some other acting coaches in the Twin Cities and trying to create some curriculum that we're hoping to maybe unveil in the fall of this year that we'll start offering some classes in addition to the improv classes that we're offering. And a lot of my improv classes now have been a lot of non-actors, which is great. I mean, they're taking improv for a lot of different reasons. And that's been kind of a fun thing to actually teach them because they're not looking to necessarily hit the stage. They're looking to find ways that improv works in their personal, professional lives. So,
So how do you see some ways that improv can work in the professional world? In your classes, do you focus the curriculum on your students and what they want to do with the what they're learning?
Absolutely. Every class that I offer at Actors Theater, they fill out a 3-question survey kind of thing before the class ever starts. So I know every student what their goals are, why they're taking the class, what they're hoping to get out of it. And so then I create the class for the next 8 weeks around the needs of those students.
Oh, cool.
I don't have one curriculum that I use for every single class. I take a look at, you know, what the students want, and then I create the 8-week class to meet their needs, and then I focus on those things for the 8 weeks. And that, I think, has been the key to my success. There are a lot of classes, and it's, you know, they're great classes, but they teach the same thing to every single group of students that come in. And I've had some classes that are heavy on the actor side. I've had some where, 10 out of 12 students are actors. Well, that's going to be a different class than I teach than the last one I just finished, which, you know, all 12 people were in the business world and had never, I think there might have been one person that had ever done any theater, but everybody else were all business folks that had never done any theater before. So I really try to customize that to the group of students because I think that accelerates their learning, and I think it creates, like we were talking about trust before, it creates a safe place for them to learn in so that I can tell them, look, you're not going to be getting up on stage. You don't have to worry about that. We're going to find ways to make this connect with what you do. I think some of the biggest things are just around being in the moment. I think creativity, being in the moment. As adults, we tend to judge our ideas more than we did when we were kids.
Yes.
Kids are natural. Back when I was at the Brave New Workshop, John Sweeney, the owner of the Brave New Workshop, always said that, you know, everybody is born creatively equal. And I believe that. I think that's true. It's what happens to us over the years that kills our creativity. And oftentimes I'll hear people say, oh, I used to be so creative. I used to do this. I used to do that. And I don't do any of that anymore. And now I woke up one day and I'm like 38 years old or whatever, and I don't do anything creative any longer. And so this is getting them back into play and getting them out of their heads. And all of a sudden they come back with stories. I had one student come back and say, you know, we did the basic game, What's in the Box? And I think a lot of us know that game. A lot of us have played that game a number of times. And this guy said, you know, I was at work the other day and somebody gave me a project that I wasn't particularly happy about. And I thought about What's in the Box. And I just said yes to it. And I thanked them for it. And immediately my attitude was different about that project because I was like, well, this doesn't have to be bad. I have a choice here in this moment to say yes to it. Now, it may not make it easier. It may still be tough.
Sure.
But I've started from a point of positivity or a moment of positivity mm-hmm. rather than negatives.
Collaboration
Absolutely.
As opposed to conflict.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And I would guess that listening is something you probably teach quite a bit too.
Yes.
Because, I mean, listening skills are something that, from what I have seen, whether you're a non-improviser all the way up to the most advanced improviser, is something that everybody still can work on. How are some ways that you work with your students on that?
Well, and I talk a lot about being an active listener mm-hmm. not only within improvisation, but just within the corporate groups, because I also do some speaking to corporate groups as well through the Actors Theater. I just was at Thomson Reuters with their young professionals group, and we talked about active listening, because I think what happens is, and we've all been there, we think we're listening, and really what we're doing is formulating our responses. Mm-hmm. And how often have we been in a conversation with someone and we're really just waiting for them to stop talking so we can start talking,
yep.
right? Mm-hmm. Rather than taking the time to let the words permeate, and I always talk about point of view with an improvisation as a filter. If I think of my point of view as a filter, that everything I do and say is filtered through that point of view, and everything I hear and receive and see is filtered through that point of view, then I'm going to be much more connected with whoever I'm talking to, whether it's in a regular conversation or whether it's on stage or whether it's wherever it is. When I am an active listener, what that means is I'm actually taking their words in. And so we practice a lot about taking your time, being patient. So often, and you see this a lot with newer improvisers, there's this feeling of like, oh my gosh, there's silence on stage. We must yeah. fill that now, mm-hmm. right? Now, Philip is great at that, right? Because Philip's been quiet the whole time, because you and I yeah. are the extroverts of the two here.
That's kind of our format. That's
nice. Is it? Philip just creepily sits next to you and silently judges you during the podcast?
That's right.
That's true.
Awesome. That's awesome. But, you know, I think that there's that feeling that silence is negative. We got to yeah. fill up every space. Right. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that because naturally in life there is silence.
Yes.
There is space. And what if are words the only thing we can fill that space with? No. We can fill it with just being in that space. So
I was actually talking about this very thing with Drew Kirsten and Eric Heiberg the other day. And Eric was talking about how he works really hard on making sure that things land, that he lets mm-hmm. things land. Mm-hmm. And if that means silence happens, then silence happens. Bringing it back to working with duos, how do you work with somebody to make sure that they know that you're letting something land, that you're not... Because oftentimes what happens when you're in a two-person scene, if you let something land, the other person's like... Fuck, I need to keep talking.
Right.
Like that person, like, I better yeah. keep going. And, yeah. and then you keep adding and adding and adding mm-hmm. rather than letting the silence reign for a minute.
Right. I think that, again, comes over time.
Okay.
I think it comes over time with improvising with that particular person and then talking about it. I mean, I think that for Adam and I, when we first started working together as a duo, I think that was very much what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, we both were... Our energy levels were such that we just started spewing stuff out
sure.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until Adam, who is great with creating space and environment, like Adam is far better at that than I am. He can honestly, he's one of those people that through his space work, you know exactly where he is. You know exactly the items and the objects that are in that room. And he's really, really good at that. There was a moment that we've joked about and that where he, because some of what we talk about, you know, we refer to the person who's under surveillance that we're sitting in, you
yeah,
know,
because right.
we're on a stakeout.
Mm-hmm.
He walked up one day to the front of the stage and literally put his hand up and opened his two fingers as if he was looking through mini blinds. And there was a moment that the audience just wanted to adopt him like that. They just burst out because he created a realistic space for them. Immediately, there was a window. Immediately, there was a space now that they could connect with. And that was just a move, you know. And so we, I think through talking to one another and letting it kind of form its own, we started to say, all right, we need to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
We need to not worry so much about how much we do. We need to worry about what it is we are doing. Two completely different things. And I think that, you know, when I can tell groups that have been together for a while, because those are the groups that can slow themselves down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the frantic moments, you can use,
Ferrari.
Well, Ferrari's one group, I think, that you can use that kind of can have a frantic pace to them. But Mike and Joe have worked together for so long.
Also,
they can pull it back. Yeah. And even in their frantic stuff, they never stop listening and they're never disconnected from one.
They always have an emotional point of view.
Exactly.
All that.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's one good example that even in a high paced, high energy set like they do, you can still have space and you can still have patience and connection that you might not get if you're just trying to fill it all up. So
how do you think a duo can work on dynamics? Because I like that idea of like the changing the pacing and having that slow and the fast and the, you know, to be able to mix things up so it's not just one thing. You're not at a plateau,
right? I think that you have to get physical. One of the things that we noticed in the class over the last 3 weeks was that the teams that were heady, you know, because they involved maybe one or two people that were particularly, you know, heady and their improv tended to be a little bit more on that side of things. It can get stagnant very quickly because it becomes so conversational or so talky that that they're missing out. And so the play is gone. I think getting physical is a huge thing. Moving around, using all the space, and using what you have physically within that space, I think, is part of the thing of that. That changes up pace. It changes up environment for you. Being willing to move out and make bold choices, too. I think that one of the things we noticed and tried to help people do is that you created, well, I use an example from class last week. There was a group that created a door, and it was the entrance to their house. It was the front door in their house. And I said, okay, the awesome thing about creating a door on stage is that every time you go in and out of that door, you don't have to be going in and out of the same place. So you can use that as an edit. All of a sudden, now you're walking out of the front door of your house, but now you've just entered into a whole new world that you can create right there on the spot. Mm-hmm. That changes the pace. That changes the dynamic of the scene, and it doesn't just keep things as they are. So I think it's beginning to see and experience the improv scene as an ever-evolving kind of living thing that is ever-changing and ever-moving, rather than just feeling like, okay, we're in the scene now where it's three guys at a table and we're having lunch together, and that's all this scene is going to be. Okay, well, doesn't mean we can't create a great scene like that. Mm-hmm. We certainly could. However, if we believe that things around us are in constant motion, then we can grab something else and move on and not even have a distinct edit. For instance, it can be something that moves us into something different. So
is it that idea of not directing the scene, not scripting it out?
Correct.
As soon as you think you know what's happening, then it's over.
That's right. And it's also, you know, it's that idea too of playing to the edit or playing to the blackout. We've all done it.
Yeah.
And you've been out there, especially when you're in a group like four, five, six people or whatever, and you've been out there and you're in this two-person scene, and you truly are playing to the edit. It's like, why aren't they editing this scene? It's obviously over. Well, they don't think it is.
Yeah.
And so are you in it until you get edited?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or are you in it to play to the edit or play to the blackout?
Right.
You know, that's the other thing. It's like, well, I know we're about done with our set, so now we're going to try to hit the high note here. And then the tech never blacks you out at that point. Right.
Yep.
Well, the problem with that is that you're not organically connected in what you're doing. let the tech worry about blacking you out. Let your scene partners worry about editing the scene, or your, you know, your troop partners, whatever. Just be in there. I always want the edit to come as a surprise to me. I always want Adam to make a move I'm not expecting. And I always want, when I'm in a larger group, I want, you know, other people to edit where I'm not expecting that to happen. If that happens, then that means I'm really in that scene, rather than just playing to like, all right, I'm going to get this out now, and then they'll edit the scene and it'll be great. Right. So
time to get one big tag.
Exactly. Exactly. It's my chocolate chip cookie theory of audiences. And that is that, the audience has a tray of chocolate chip cookies, and those are laughs. All right. Mm-hmm. When you have a tray of chocolate chip cookies, how many do you want? Just one? No, you will eat as many as you possibly can. Well, as soon as you get that laugh, it's like they gave you a chocolate chip cookie and you see that tray and you want as many as you can get. The difference between okay improvisers and great improvisers, in my mind, is that they see that as a shared piece. I'll take a bite of that cookie, but I want to hand it off to the next person too. Mm-hmm. I want us all to have that one cookie, but I also want us to keep taking cookies off the tray together. And it's not just laughs. It's reactions, emotional connections, whatever that is. So, sure. Yeah.
I think it's about time that we throw this over to Philip for our new segment called Philip's Corner.
Philip's Corner, the time where Philip stops shutting up and starts asking questions.
All right. Nice. Awesome.
John.
Yes.
What is your favorite kind of cookie?
My favorite kind of, it really is chocolate chip. I mean, it's, you can't really go wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there a brand or homemade?
Homemade. Homemade.
Do you make them?
I do make chocolate chip cookies. I do. I mean, if I can get other people to make them for me, all the better. But I have made them for myself. Yes.
Any allergies?
Yes, I am. And funny enough, I'm allergic to cats. Yeah, I know. And but your cat has no. I know. Matthew has a cat. For those of you that don't know in the audience, but actually, it's not bothered me here. So it just depends. But yeah, cats. Amphicillin, which is a form of which is like a form of penicillin. Yeah, yeah. I think. I'm allergic to that too. Those are the only two I'm aware of.
When you were seven,
mm-hmm.
who did you look up to?
I would have to say when I was seven, it would be my Sunday school teacher that I had, and I still remember her name, Mrs. Simpson. And I looked up to her primarily because she was one of the most caring individuals. And I would also say my grandmother was that way too. Those were two women in my life who actually, like, I just trusted. I believed that their care for me and love for me was truly unconditional, and that they accepted me as the goofball 7-year-old I was, kind of loud and extroverted. So yeah, those would be at least one or two people for sure. I know everybody right now just freaked out that I had a Sunday school teacher. They're like, you didn't go to church. He's lying.
I'll ask one more question.
Please.
Spirals.
Is that the question? All right, James
and
Lipton. Thanks, James Lipton. Mr. Haynes, my question is spirals. Is that the question, spirals?
Sure, that is
sure,
the question.
Sure, spirals. I like that question. Spirals makes me think of Spirograph.
That's what I thought of,
and
too.
And you guys might be, I'm glad one of you remembers it, but I was thinking you guys might be too young to remember Spirograph. But I had Spirograph.
The toy.
Yeah, toy with the little plastic discs and the pens, and you put them in the different points, and you made different spirals and different, you know, kind of designs and stuff. So that's what that made me think of was Spirograph.
Don't call it a toy. It is a product. It is an art producer.
It is an art producer.
Okay.
You have not seen my Spirograph collection.
It's just an entire basement filled with Spirograph. It's so scary. And is that it?
That is Philip's
Corner. Nice. Philip's Corner. I like Philip's Corner.
Thank you so
it's
much.
Scary, but yet warm and inviting. I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. I both feel like I got abducted, but at the same time, nothing happened, so it was okay.
So it was fine. It was a fun abduction.
Right, it was.
All right, you ready to do a bat, John?
I'm ready.
All right.
Next up, bats!
I baked you kids some cookies.
Aww. Oh, that's so sweet of you.
Take a break from your Nintendo and have some cookies and milk.
now's not a great time to pause this game.
No, we're right in the middle of this.
But kids, I've slaved over the hot oven to make you these ginger snaps.
Mom, get out of the way.
I brought you cold milk. I went to the farm and got fresh milk because I wanted it to be the best for you.
Edward, maybe we can just pause for... I mean, she did... That's a lot of work.
You spent all morning playing your Nintendo.
Lincoln, where can I finally beat the boss?
I know, but cookies and milk.
She did slave.
She did. And
okay, let's do it.
Mom, you know what? You're more important than Nintendo.
Oh,
you are.
Oh, thanks, sweetheart.
Sure. And
here's the card. Look, I made them into heart shapes.
Those are really good.
They're really delicious.
Try the milk. It's really fresh.
I'm just going to dip mine right in. And
I'm going to drink mine.
That's really good.
I love you boys so much. It's just so nice to actually see your faces. Normally they're just lit up with the blue of the Nintendo screen.
Oh, Mom.
You boys look so handsome when you're not bathed in blue light.
Shouldn't say that.
Seriously.
Come on, you're going to make me blush.
Well, red on your cheeks is better than blue.
Oh, Mom.
Also, boys, our electric bill has been soaring, and I need you... I made you these cookies as a bribe to tell you that we're turning off the power for the rest of the month, and you can't play your Nintendo. Sorry.
What?
I'm just going to go back down to the basement and turn off the circuit breaker to this room.
No. But that's our only entertainment.
It's the only way we ever have fun.
Sorry, kids. I love you. Bye.
Well, none of us could have seen that coming. I mean, she quit.
Yep.
I don't know. I thought she was happy here. I thought that she loved her job. She was one of the top performing sales managers we've ever had. And next thing I know, boom, 2 weeks notice. Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere to you, maybe. I think there may have been some signs.
Well, enlighten me, because I obviously was completely clueless, because this took me by complete surprise.
Gentlemen, I'm still here, and this is actually why. You don't even acknowledge my existence.
Well, Janet, let's be honest.
See, I feel like maybe she feels excluded from the group sometimes, and that's maybe why she decided to quit.
Well, you know, I'll admit, this group isn't the easiest group to break into, honestly. But, I mean, she was, like I said, one of the top sales managers
we had,
right?
I'm going to miss her when she's gone.
I'm going to miss her, too, and I'm sure the bottom line's going to miss her. I mean, the amount of commissions she brought in, and I mean...
It was staggering, considering I had been here for 4 months, but...
Do you know how long she was here? I can't remember.
I don't know, 2 months, 3 months,
it
somewhere
was four
in there.
Months.
Somewhere in there.
I mean, maybe four.
It was
that long?
It
could have been.
You know why? Because I just said that.
You know, it was one of those things where I wish she expressed herself more. You know what I mean? Like, if she would have really talked to us and expressed herself.
Yeah, I feel like it can't all be our fault.
Well, it certainly can't be all of our fault.
It's definitely not all my fault.
No,
it is 100% both of your faults. Like,
you know, maybe it's just that, and I don't know where she's going. You know, I mean, she gave her 2 weeks' notice. I'm assuming, I mean, given her resume
Rockford, and look at
everything
me. For
where
God's
she...
God's sake, look at me.
Did you...
Anyway, it's just that...
Oh my God, you are the most frustrating men.
All I know is that she's going to end up somewhere, and my biggest concern is it's going to be one of our competitors.
You're damn right it is. I already signed. I told you,
know, you
that. I already signed.
I was worried about that at first.
At Accenture.
I was worried at first, but I thought...
I'm going to Accenture. I'm going to be one of their VPs.
I don't know that she has the skills that they would want.
I do.
Oh, good point.
I'm already hired.
Do you remember her doing anything spectacular when she was here?
Yes.
I mean, outside of the being one of the top sales managers, but, you know, to me, that has more to do with the product and the services we offer than it does with the person.
Your products are terrible.
Right?
Exactly.
I mean, who couldn't sell?
In 4 months.
These printers sell themselves. It doesn't matter who's sitting behind
us.
Absolutely.
They're awful.
Right? Right, you show them a catalog, you give them a demonstration, and next thing you know, you've made a sale.
You're both terrible people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
She was kind of cute, though.
Well,
shut
yeah.
the fuck up! Carl, you turn your face this way right now!
I just had a spasm on my cheek.
I know, I noticed that.
Oh my God.
I noticed that.
So you guys want to learn how to play basketball, is that right?
Yes, sir.
I would love to learn to play basketball.
That's why we came to you, the best. You're the best.
I understand that I'm the best. Larry Bird is the best.
That's right.
Yes, you are, Mr. Bird.
But I guess my question is not what you want to do.
Play basketball.
Yes,
better.
Yeah. I understand that. Yep. Why do you want to learn?
Money.
Money. Babes.
Right.
Okay.
Fame, sponsorship. Fortune. Yep. I mean, look at you. You can't go anywhere without people recognizing
that's,
you.
Everyone knows right? what Larry Bird yeah. looks like.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
I want my jersey retired one day, hanging in the rafters of the stadium in which I played.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
That's cool. You have to admit that's cool, Mr. Bird.
It has been a pretty cool career.
Yeah.
But, gentlemen, you're both my age.
Right.
Right.
Your playing career is... There's no chance of you getting signed to a team.
No,
you're just going to be learning.
Well, when we learn.
Right.
So when we learn Larry Bird skills,
right.
they'll want us.
Right.
Totally.
Exactly.
We're going to Rodney Dangerfield it. We're not going to start till we're in our 50s.
Right.
And then we're going to be pow.
You're suggesting that my parents were wrong when they said I could do anything I wanted.
When they said that 40 years ago.
Yeah, they did. They told me 40 years ago when I was 10,
mm-hmm.
they said, you can be anything you want to be.
Yeah, you
put your mind to it. And I'm putting my mind to it.
Did you just make that decision now?
I didn't know I would want to be a basketball
player.
What
did you do for the last 40 years?
A lot of things. I don't know. Not basketball really so much, but a lot of other things that, you know,
mm-hmm.
I pretty much was successful at those. I mean, let's be honest. How hard can basketball really be?
Right?
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 No, it's pretty hard.
Kids do it.
Seriously.
Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, anybody, mm-hmm. really.
I mean, it's based on, you know, the basics of trajectory, right?
Well, and who's better at basketball, a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old?
Good point.
A 10-year-old?
Who's better, 10-year-old or a 20-year-old?
20-year-old.
So guess who's going to be better, 20-year-old or a 52-year-old ex-accountant?
There
boom.
It is. There it is.
Boom.
You know what? Well, logic. You were just intercepted by logic.
I thought that you guys were coming in to maybe, have some fun, maybe meet some new people, learn a skill. Because
I think we want all those things,
yeah.
right?
We but, do. As long as they lead to money and fame.
And but, babes.
Babes.
But I can't guarantee, the Larry Bird Celebrity Basketball Camp cannot guarantee that you're going to get money and fame and babes out of this experience.
Then why would you call it the celebrity basketball?
Because
I mean, celebrity kind of assumes money, fame, and babes.
Myself and the other coaches are all celebrities.
Yeah.
And that's...
And so can we be.
Right.
That's the motto.
Right.
The
I'm sorry,
unspoken
can you say that again?
So can we be.
Yes, I agree.
It's Larry Bird's Celebrity Basketball Camp. So can we be.
Right.
That's in the underscore.
Because you learn... From someone who's already done it. Like, I wouldn't, if I wanted to become, let's say, I don't know, a doctor, and
uh-huh.
and I went to med school,
right.
and I had to study surgery, I would assume that at some point I'm going to be studying with a surgeon who's already made it,
yeah.
and then they're going to teach me how to become a surgeon, and then I'm going to become a surgeon. So why would I ever take a class where the person hadn't already established themselves in that field, right? I mean,
right. Right.
Okay.
Totally.
Unless I wanted to become that person.
I would like for you guys to sign a waiver saying I am not responsible if you don't become famous and rich.
So if you fail at your job that you promised in the pamphlets about us becoming famous,
yeah.
rich celebrities.
I didn't promise that in the pamphlets.
Well, it was kind of between the lines.
I mean,
you can kind of read between the lines.
I read every other word, and it said, you will be famous,
right.
rich. Pamphlets don't
pretty
lie.
Much in there.
Can you show me that in the pamphlet?
It's right here in the pamphlet.
It's right here.
See, if you read every other word.
Oh, my God.
I mean, if you read the
that.
Full sentence.
This full sentence didn't make any sense
it
at
said,
all.
See, the full sentence says, you are going to find fame in our role as celebrity coaches. But if you read just a few of those words, you are going to find fame is right there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I can see where... Yeah.
I've decoded it.
Yeah.
If you are an idiot, you might read it like that.
So you're suggesting that basketball players are all smart?
Yes. You didn't know that, did you? If you look at Mensa's roster, it's actually the same roster as the 1972 world champion Knicks.
That changes everything.
We just got intercepted by logic.
We should have went to Camp Pippen.
Damn it.
And you did all this remodeling yourself.
Sure did. Everything in here done with my own hands.
Wow. You're quite a woodworker.
Well, thank you. It's a little skill I picked up from my grandfather, and I have a lathe downstairs in the basement, and
did you toot?
No, that's just the instability of the table that you're leaning on that I built. You have to be really careful with some of the stuff I've built. The one area that I'm not great at is the final construction of the particular piece. Like, I can cut out the tabletop and refinish it and you know, put the wood on the lathe and make the legs and everything, but it's that final step of actually constructing it that I haven't quite... it's a little
wobbly. The tabletop is beautiful.
Looking
underneath, all of the legs are different lengths.
If you could just be really
looks
careful,
like there's like two nails holding this table together.
There's not much. You're right.
Looks gorgeous.
And that's I build things more for the look, not necessarily the functionality. Like, if you step away and look at it, it's like, wow, you built that. I sure did. Now, we're not really going to eat off this table.
Oh, so I have to hold my plate in my lap?
I have a TV tray that I...
Did you build that?
No. Okay. No, you're safe. All right. Bought those. I bought those, so you're safe with that.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. And just be aware that you hung your coat on that coat rack when you came in.
Yeah, my big heavy wool coat.
Yeah, you probably have about 5 more minutes before that whole thing just collapses.
Oh, well, I'll probably be out of here in 5 minutes. I forgot that I can't stay for the date. I forgot that I have other plans.
Wait a minute. But we've been planning this for quite some time.
I'm sorry.
But Karen, he seemed so nice. Why did you book out of the date so quickly?
Well, just everything was shoddy. I just knew that our relationship was going to be held together by a shoestring.
Karen, everything in your life you look at as a metaphor. Maybe he wasn't shoddy. Maybe it was just his workmanship.
Well, it's kind of... His workmanship is like the effort that he puts into things, and you're saying I should give him another chance.
I think you should. I think that sometimes you look too deeply into things, and sometimes you should just take them at face value.
You've got a point, Carol.
Thanks.
I'm going to call him tonight.
Okay.
Hello?
Richard, I'm really sorry about the other night when I left in such a hurry. I'd like to give you a second chance.
Jill, I got to be honest with you. I never expected to hear from you again. I thought that you just thought I was shoddy and that my everything about me was just subpar.
That's exactly what I thought, but I thought I'd give you a second chance. How about I come over this weekend and we have a barbecue on that deck that you just finished?
Well, that is one way that you can tell.
What, by looking at the toe tag?
Yeah,
that's
one way.
That's one way. But, Mr. Sanderson, I really think that you should look at the face to see whether or not this is your daughter. I mean,
I just don't know if I'm ready for that kind of commitment at this point. I think I'd rather just keep it below the ankles, if that's okay.
I mean, we think it's your daughter, mm-hmm. but I mean, really, the reason we asked you down here to mm-hmm. identify your daughter was mm-hmm. not to look at whether or not we put the right name on the tag. We really would like for you to look at the face.
So are you suggesting to me that you speculate speculated that this was my daughter, so you wrote her name on the toe tag
right.
without knowing it was actually my daughter. Is that even legal?
Yeah.
So what if I had refused to come down to make a positive ID?
You probably would have been thrown in jail for refusal to ID a corpse.
I don't know that that's a thing, but I...
Mark, what do you think about this one? I think she looks like an Amy. I'm going to write Amy on the toe tag.
Yeah, do the French one, though. A-I-M-E-E.
Oh, yeah, she looks a little French, maybe.
Yeah.
What should I put for a last name?
Eh.
Something French.
Eh.
Amy? Eh. With an apostrophe somewhere to make it French. All right.
Yeah. French apostrophe.
Now you should call Mr. Eh and see if this is his daughter.
Okay.
I guess I should look at her face. What's clear to me, though, is I'm amazed that you got the spelling of our last name correct with the apostrophe in the exact location. Very few people... unless they are, in fact, French, know that.
Well, that's how I was able to find you in the phone book. See, we actually do use a phone book still. No internet down here.
Hmm. That might explain your procedure of just writing names on toe tags.
We're underfunded.
Dental records? I mean, I think I've seen that on CSI where they use dental records to...
What are those?
Well, it would be the records from her dentist that showed... tooth structure and dental records. Mm.
No, sorry. No, we
DNA?
Just... Nope, mostly just looked at her face, kind of took a guess.
Because I brought some hair off of her hairbrush. You could do a DNA maybe testing and I wouldn't have to...
We could... Yeah, I'll take it.
Mark, what do you want me to do with this hair?
I don't know. Just, you know, put it down the sink like we do with the rest of our hair.
All right. I'm going to fashion it into a doll.
Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, I'm going to tie it around. Look at this little, it's like a voodoo hair doll.
Oh, that's cool. What are you going to name it?
I don't know, it looks like a Jill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That works.
So the test results from the DNA, did that come back at all?
Yeah, we're pretty sure it's her.
DNA evidence tends to be rather either their DNA or it's not. So, I mean, what do you mean? Are we talking 60%, 70%, 90%?
No, it's like 60%.
I'm going to have to look at her face, aren't I? All right. Just pull the cover back and let me see.
All right. Here you go. What?
That is not my daughter.
What?
That is not...
Well, who is it then?
You know what? I have no idea, obviously, but I know it's not my daughter.
Well, if you don't know who she is, how am I supposed to figure it out?
I would imagine that you have other missing persons and... somebody else is probably, I mean, oh my God.
Well, where's your daughter then?
I don't know. She's missing. That's why I called the police 2 weeks ago and said she was missing.
But
I don't know where she is.
Why don't you do something about it?
Oh my God. I have been. We've got flyers up. We've organized search parties. We've talked to the people that have seen her last. We found her car in a park, and that's the last anybody saw of her when she was going running. And...
you sure this isn't her?
Oh, my God. Yes, I'm sure. I think I would know my own daughter.
So the guy said it's not... No. That's not Amy, huh?
So I guess we're going to have to guess again.
Let's just throw this body away. It's been nothing but trouble. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm your biggest fan. Oh, my God. I can't believe that I saw you at the market just picking up bananas like anybody. Oh, my God. You're such a big... star, I can't believe you pick all your own bananas.
Well, you know, I mean, I need bananas as much as the next
person. Oh, that's adorable. Oh, that's great.
I suppose it is, yes.
You like them a little bit green, just like I do. We like our bananas the same way because we're like, I'm not going to eat my banana right now. I got to let it be green for a while first.
Exactly.
Oh, my God, I can't believe it.
Yes, we're still working on the last bunch that
Will you sign my bananas?
Well, of course I will.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you.
Pen on you or a Sharpie or something.
I always carry a Sharpie.
Excuse me, Mr. McGregor. Do you want me to get rid of this guy?
No, it's fine. I like my fans. They're the reason I do as well as I do.
We here at Whole Foods don't tolerate people adoring other people.
Paul, I appreciate that. You've always been very good to me here. I appreciate that. But, you know, I don't want to... to upset a fan, of course, I'm sure.
Could you do me a favor?
Sure.
When you sign the bananas, mm-hmm. when I peel them, yes. it usually comes into three pieces. So could you sign three different places on the banana? So then when I eat the banana, I have three signed banana peels? That would be so great. You're such a nice guy.
Of course I will. Just hand me the banana and the Sharpie there. And your name is?
Dylan.
Dylan?
Dylan! I like to write it with an exclamation point.
Oh, I see.
Yeah! Well,
that's amazing.
That's how I write your name in my dream journal, with an exclamation point after it.
Dylan! Exclamation
point. That's great!
Hopefully you get all the potassium you need.
Oh, that's so witty. Thank you so much,
you're
Mr. McGregor.
Dan.
You're just the best. Oh my God, every person should be just as smart and brilliant and just talented as you. Thank oh my, you, can I follow you the rest of the day? I want to see what else you eat.
I don't know about that exactly.
I just
signed your banana.
Just checking in. Everything's still good?
Paul, I think this is getting a little weird now.
Okay.
He actually has just asked to follow me around.
What's it? Did you catch his name?
For the rest of, his name is Dylan. It's very exciting.
Hi, Paul.
Okay, Dylan.
Hi.
Time for you to go.
Paul, please don't make me leave. Can you believe that Mr. McGregor is here? I'm so excited.
I can believe it because celebrities love to shop here. You remember last week when you did this to Miss Dion?
Yeah.
Oh, so this isn't Dylan's first time.
No.
Oh.
Dylan does this to any celebrity that walks in.
Explain the Larry Bird story I heard a while back where he was here and
he
signed my cantaloupe as if it were a basketball. He drew lines like it was a bat. It was so adorable. He's such a smart, famous, rich guy.
Okay, Dylan, it's time to go.
Oh, please, Paul. I just want to know what percent of milk he drinks.
You know what I want to know, Dylan? Why do you do this?
Dylan, maybe what you need in your life is just a level of self-esteem that allows you to believe that you, in fact, are a celebrity. The only thing different between you and I is that I've been in movies.
Lots of them, like Star Wars.
Well, of course. And that people recognize me on the street. But Dylan, if you work hard enough, create your own persona, perhaps, that one day... Oh. Imagine this. You would be recognized yourself. And someone would come up to you and be like, Dylan, it's Dylan. I'm finally meeting Dylan.
I could sign their produce.
You could sign their produce.
Imagine my name on a frozen pizza box.
With an exclamation.
Dylan! You don't teach a camp that helps people become rich and famous and talented, do you? Because I would take that in a minute.
Actually, Dylan, I do.
Sign me up, Mr. McGregor.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm sure tired of selling these ballpark franks up and down those stairs.
Ooh. Tell me about it.
Humidity and the heat today. Oh.
And my back is killing me.
Ooh.
But, can you guys keep a secret?
Well, sure, Frank.
Sure. Hot dog salesman.
Yeah, the bond between us hot dog dealers. Impenetrable.
That's true. Exactly. Can you say that again?
Impenetrable.
All right. I didn't sell any hot dogs today.
What?
I
it's such a good hot dog weather day.
I had to reload the twice.
Yeah. I all these hot dogs that are gone, I ate them all. I ate them all.
You ate 57 hot dogs.
57.
All right, what's going on? Tell us what's going on.
Hey.
Frank,
come on.
Guys, you know I eat when I'm depressed.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Tell us what's happening. Tell
us. Hot dog hole in your heart right now.
You know what it is?
It's Beth, isn't it?
It's not Beth. There's nothing wrong with Beth.
Well, then tell us.
It's me, guys.
What?
It's
wrong, Frank?
What?
I can't get up and down the stairs like I used to could.
Frank, look, you've been at this game a long time. I mean... Everybody loses a step.
Yeah, but, you know, I used to be able to make it around the entire Wrigley, and, you know, it only took me about an inning or two. And now it takes me three innings to get around all of the park.
I've noticed that, but,
I have too, but Frank, the way you interact with the crowd.
Well, I do love the crowd.
Right? I mean, nothing can change that.
But I just can't move like I used to could.
Well, maybe.
Focus on your quality interactions instead of quantity, maybe.
Do you know how many times I've walked into a section and they've heard hot dogs and they've turned around expecting to see you and they saw me?
Ah, come on.
Disappointment,
you've got
my
that
friend.
Voice, Frank.
Disappointment. Eddie. Seriously, they're like, oh, no. We want a Frank. How come we're not in Frank's section today?
That's true. People have said, I don't want that hot dog unless Frank gives it to
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
Really?
I say it's the same hot dog. And they're like,
hand to God.
It's not a Frank dog.
Hand to God. Hand to God.
You guys aren't just saying
no.
this.
No. Why would we just say that? Look, we have talked before about it without you around where we're just like, man, one day I just want to be like Frank. I want people to recognize me. When I walk down that aisle and I'm running up the steps, I want them to chant my name like they do Frank.
That's why Eddie started wearing the polka dots. That he'd be recognizable as the polka dot hot dog guy.
I thought I could camouflage it a little bit and they'd be like, oh, that. Then they always see my face, and they're like, that's not Frank. I'm not.
But, you know, you say about running up the steps, I can't do that no more.
Do you know what you do, Frank?
What's that?
You're running up the steps of their hearts.
Eddie.
True.
That's something
Too
we
true.
Can't do. That's, we can't do that.
We.
That's something a stand-up guy would say. That's a real nice thing to say.
Well, it's true, though. Maybe you don't have to physically be the Frank you were before. Maybe what you've given them emotionally, spiritually even, is enough.
You guys made me feel a lot better. A lot better. And I'm not hungry anymore.
That's great, Frank.
That's a good thing.
Thanks, guys. Selling hot dogs with you is maybe the best thing I've ever done.
Well, our bond is impenetrable.
Ditto.
You say that again.
Impenetrable.
Thank you. Captain Jansen, you're needed on the flight deck right now.
It has been a long day, and I just want you to take care of that crap for me.
Captain Jansen, the co-pilot is requesting your presence immediately.
Where's Jansen?
I'm trying to get him, sir. Apparently, the plane is in dire need. Captain, right now.
It's a very simple instrument panel, computerized navigation.
Captain Jansen, apparently there is a serious electrical storm. We are right in the middle of it, and the co-pilot is a rookie that doesn't know what the fuck he's
doing.
Fine.
I'm here.
Jansen.
Yes, Wilson.
I don't know what any of these buttons do.
Oh, God. Why? And please tell me you haven't just been pushing them randomly
I've been
again?
Pushing them randomly, hoping that one of them is
all
the right one.
Sir, okay. He's been turning dials.
Oh,
he's,
God. Step away.
Himself,
step away. Put
sir.
Your hands. Sit on your hands.
Okay.
Sit on your hands.
Yep.
He peed himself, sir.
Well, that's something we're going to have to deal with later.
He has now literally put his hands into his own urine.
I understand that. It's the best place for him.
You gotta fix this, Jansen.
I'm working on that right now. I just am. Oh my God! Look,
I think I turned everything off.
You've got us completely off course. We're about 183 miles off course.
Sorry.
183. I'm surprised that someone hasn't been on the radio to find out why we have veered off.
I probably turned the radio off. I've just been pushing everybody.
Oh my God, you did turn the radio. Hang on.
Captain Jansen, come in. Captain Jansen, come in.
This is Captain Jansen.
Captain Jansen, this is Tower. Please report on your location.
We are about 183 miles off course.
Sorry.
Because of Wilson. He disengaged the computerized GPS and flight pattern, and I am attempting to get us back on track.
Oh, my God. Captain Jansen, do you understand? You do not have the fuel to get back over land.
I'm aware of that, but I didn't want to mention that to everyone else right now, but thank you for alerting us to that.
Oh, Captain Jansen, I just realized that I The intercom button's been on this whole time. Everyone on the plane heard you say that.
Ladies and gentlemen, please ignore the previous statement. Everything is fine up here on the flight deck. We are just experiencing a little difficulty. We had to fly around. We will be diverting to another airfield to refuel, and then we will be on our way, and I apologize for any inconvenience.
Jansen, we are sending up a refueling jet that's going to help you refuel mid-air.
You're going to refuel us mid-air. That's great.
There is no way you can get back to land.
What's the ETA on the fuel plane?
1 hour.
We're just going to make that. We have about an hour of fuel left in this thing.
I'm so sorry, Jansen.
Okay, you keep saying that, Wilson, but that doesn't make fuel magically appear in our tanks.
Well, that's
true. Nor does it get these people to their location on time. Do you understand that your role as a pilot involves...
Co-pilot. I only signed up for co-pilot. I figured I'm never going to have to pilot the plane. I just watched the other guy.
That's the whole idea. Yes, Tower.
We just realized that the refueling plane is going to be there just after your plane goes down. You're going to have to jettison approximately 210 pounds of cargo.
Oh, my God. Wilson?
Yeah.
I'm going to need you. I have to get this aircraft down to a safe altitude.
What are you saying, Jansen?
We are going to have to open...
You're looking at me funny,
a hatch. Here's why I'm looking at you funny, because I worry about what I'm about to tell you, that you can even follow these directions. You are going to need to go down into the holding area where the luggage is, and you're going to have to start throwing luggage out of this aircraft.
I've never been to the luggage place.
Okay, I will have...
I normally just come straight to the cockpit.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
I'm not sure where you're talking about, though.
I will have one of the flight attendants escort you to the luggage area, okay?
Yeah, okay.
And then you will have to manually open the hatch and begin to discard luggage, and luggage only.
All right, I can do that.
All right.
You wanted me to take him to the luggage compartment?
Yes, please take him to the luggage compartment. I'm getting us down to a safe altitude.
And then I put my hands in it. Sorry, it's been a crazy day up here. I don't know what any of these buttons do. I don't know why Jansen
would
leave me.
Please get him out of my flight deck. Please.
All right, I will make this right, Jansen. I'm so sorry. I know this is my fault. I will correct the situation.
Co-pilot Wilson, we're just going to go by these people. Try not to get urine on them, please.
I'm trying. I'm just dripping.
That's just our co-pilot.
Excuse me, flight attendant? Yes? It smells like urine in here?
I'll get you another Coke.
I'm sorry, passenger. I pissed my pants, and then I put my hands in it.
Did he just say he pissed?
I did. I'm so sorry, everybody. I'm sorry.
Co-pilot just said he missed his pants.
He didn't. All right, right down here, sir.
This is where the cargo is.
This is all the luggage.
How do you open this door?
No, that's not it. No, what you're doing right now is pushing against a wall.
It's not a push door, it's a pull? How do I pull this wall open? It's not working.
Sir, I don't understand why the captain didn't just elect to push you out of the plane.
Because I weigh exactly 210 pounds.
Because you do weigh exactly 210 pounds, yes.
I guess that's an option. I can't get into this crazy cargo hold.
I'm pretty sure with your urine hands you could fly down. Would you want to fly down?
Is that how aerodynamics work? I didn't pay attention in pilot school.
That is how aerodynamics work.
Well, just tell Captain Jansen that I'm sorry about everything and I'm going to make this right. Can you open this door?
Sure.
Goodbye, everybody. I'm so sorry. No!
Captain Jansen?
Yes.
We jettisoned 210 pounds.
That's about the approximate weight of Wilson.
He said he's sorry.
Well done.
Next up, Pat!
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest, John Haynes.
You can see John over at the Actors Theater of Minnesota, where he is the artistic director as well as the director of education. He has also just finished up teaching a duos class at Huge Theater at 31st and Lindale in Minneapolis, Minnesota, along with Adam Felix, and their showcase was today, so you missed it. They will very possibly be teaching another one of those classes this summer, and maybe doing some other stuff at Huge Theater too. He is also a talent agent at Nuts in Golden Valley, Minnesota, so you can contact him there too if you're interested in doing any of that work.
You can see me this Friday in the Friday night stage match at the Brave New Workshop Student Union, 26th and Hennepin. Also, always go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PhilipSimondet, for songs and sketches and things. And check out my other podcast. It's a video podcast called Minimum Fare.
And you can see me also at Friday Night Stage Match at different Fridays through the middle of June. Don't know my dates. And you can also see me at Huge Wednesdays at Huge Theater through the end of May with A Night Out. And that's also with Carolyn Blomberg, Tanya Albert, Max Malega, Andy Katzung, and Joe Halverson.
Thanks for all of your feedback on the polls, on the Facebook page, and otherwise. We want more. Keep sending us your thoughts at nextatbatpodcast@gmail.com and on the Facebook page, Next at Bat.
Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and review. It helps us out. Thank you very much. Tune in next week.